Let me see what you can do.
Hot topics and interviews.
And that's just how we do it.
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for.
It's the Entertainment Man Podcast.
Entertainment Man Podcast is brought to you by Crispy on the Web. Go to crispyontheweb.com for more information, social media, and much, much more.
Hello, buddy, and welcome to the Man Podcast. I'm your host, Crispy Man, welcome to the podcast. Welcome to a interview podcast, as I promised. It is good to be back once again, and today I have on the podcast Chet Kolaska. How's it going, Chet?
Good. How are you, Chris?
Doing great. This is my 193rd episode already.
Wow.
I've been doing this for almost 3.5 years, and now I've gotten almost up to 200 episodes. Time goes by fast, you know?
Yeah, well, these are fun to do. So, you know, time does fly when you're having fun. I'm sure you are.
Oh, I am, yeah. And I only been doing interviews for over a year now. So, I mean, before it was just topics, and then it just grew from there. So it's amazing. Can you tell me a little bit about yourself?
Sure. My topic here is diabetes, but I'm not a medical professional of any kind. I'm a business person, owned half of a company for many years, sold it, and now I'm in the process of trying to teach people about diabetes. What I've found over time is that people do not understand the disease well, and because of that, they suffer unnecessary complications and early deaths, and I think it's time to straighten things out, simplify the message, and get people to understand really what's going on. So, as I say, I'm not a medical professional, but I've learned a lot about it. I'd like to explain to you why I started doing this in the first place. As I mentioned, I'm not a professional, but I'm a business person. When I sold my half of the company, I decided to do this after an experience in Chicago. I was in Chicago a number of years ago when Ron Santo was inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame. I didn't know anything about Ron Santo at all until that week, but there was a lot of articles about him in the Tribune and on TV and all the rest of it. And it turned out that Santo had diabetes back in the 1960s. Back then, nobody really knew about it except that it was a really serious disease, and Santo was afraid that the Cubs would fire him if they found out that he had diabetes, so he didn't tell anybody about it. Now, I got to break off and give you a little diabetes background here before I tell the rest of the story. When diabetics take insulin, they have a danger of their blood sugars going too low. We all know that the serious damage is caused by high blood sugars, but low blood sugars present a different problem. The reason for that is that the brain takes glucose directly from the bloodstream for energy. And when there's not enough glucose in the blood, the brain starts to go haywire. You can start sweating profusely. You know, your eyesight can go bad. You lose coordination. You know, your brain controls the whole body. And because that glucose isn't there, it starts getting progressively worse. Well, Santo was in a game in Chicago. It was the last of the ninth. The Cubs were down by two. There were two outs and two men on base. So Santo was in the on-deck circle, and he felt the low blood sugar symptoms coming on. So he knew what could happen in the end. So he just prayed that the guy at the plate would make an out and retire the side. Well, instead, the guy walked. So now it was bases loaded, two outs, two down, bottom of the ninth. Santa said he walked up to the plate, and he looked up, and he was seeing in triple. He saw three scoreboards, three pitchers, 30-some-odd people standing out in the field. And when the pitcher threw the ball, he said it looked like it had a slinky attached to the back of it. So he took a swing at it, connected, and put it out of the park for a walk-off Grand Slam home run. Well, Santa made it around the bases and back to the dugout in time to eat his candy bar to get his sugar back up. And he got there in time, so he didn't pass out, which is actually what happens when the sugar gets low enough. So I read that story, and I thought, man, this is really a great story. Mm-hmm. But not because he hit a Grand Slam home run. It was that he managed to make it around the bases and back in time. Now, as a diabetic, I could relate to this because most of us who take insulin have had brushes with low blood sugars, and we know just what it feels like. You know what's coming on. Mm-hmm. If you don't want to make a big deal out of it, and so you just try to cut it out. So Santa did that successfully. Well, I came home and started telling that story, and that's when I realized how badly people understand diabetes. You know, for me, as a diabetic, I could relate to the story instantly, but most of the people I told it to didn't have a clue as to what the problem was. So I had to explain it. But then when I explained it, I found that people would ask me questions about diabetes, mainly about type 2. I've got type 1. And what I realized is, when I looked into it, is that I didn't understand type 2 at all. In fact, I held many of the misconceptions about type 2 that other people do as well. And that's when I realized that we have a serious problem here. And that's when I decided to try to do what I could to educate people about diabetes. The way the current system is, the message is just not getting across. And there are a lot of reasons for that. And, you know, I cut across all those and try to get people to understand.
All right. So can you talk about your journey with diabetes?
Sure. I've been diabetic since 1981. When I was diagnosed, I had an idea that I had diabetes. I had gotten really sick, and I never get sick. I still really never get sick, but this particular time for a week, I was laid up on the sofa and I couldn't even move. About 2 months later, I found that I was having typical symptoms of diabetes, although I didn't know it at the time. You get thirsty, you urinate a lot, you run down. And the reason for that is that the blood sugar starts building up. And because of that, you get lethargic and your body tries to get rid of the sugar as best it can. Mm-hmm. So it develops the CERS. So you're constantly, you know, putting water into your bloodstream and then flushing it out and flushing it out. And that's a continual thing. It doesn't stop until you start controlling your blood sugars. Now, even then, I didn't put two and two together because I just didn't know. So I was in the Blue Cross Blue Shield office on business one morning, and I was sitting there in the waiting room, and they had a bunch of pamphlets that described various common diseases. I just happened to pick one up about diabetes, and I had all the symptoms. The only ones I didn't have were the ones that applied to women. So I made an appointment with the doctor, and I walked into his office, and I didn't even have a doctor until that point. So this guy was new to me, and I was new to him. He asked me what brought me there, and I told him, I think I've got diabetes. And he gave me this look, Chris, like, yeah, you and every other hypochondriac, you know, walks in here diagnosing their own disease. You know, let's see what's going on. So he took a blood sample, and he came back and said, well, you've got diabetes. So it didn't catch me totally unawares because I really believed I had it anyway. But from then on, you know, I've been on insulin ever since. And I promised myself that you need to take insulin at least once a day, every single day. And I've had it for over 40 years now, and I have never, ever not taken insulin to one degree or another. So I've had pretty good luck with it. My control has been really very good. You know, it was good enough that a few years ago, Joslin Diabetes Center at Harvard University asked me to be part of a study. I had it 30 years at that point, and they wanted to look at people who had gone that long with diabetes without having complications. So I've participated in that. You know, when I die one day, they'll take tissue samples and, you know, try to figure out what makes me tick, maybe. So I'm happy to do that. But I followed the same process that I did for the first 30 years. I watch what I eat, I exercise, and I just keep trying to do the right things. So I think my own experience is something good to share with people. Because so many people don't have a clue, and when I can lay out simply what I do, which isn't really complicated, a lot of people realize they can do it too.
Okay, yeah. And actually, I have two family members actually that have diabetes. My two uncles actually have diabetes. One's had it for many, many, many years now, probably 20, 30 years himself. And then also my other uncle, who's more closer into me, like closer here to me. He's closer. He lives closer to me. So he just found out he has diabetes. I'm not sure which one it is, but I know there's a couple of different versions. Talk about that. What types of diabetes are there?
Sure. What we need to do first is to explain how the normal body works, and it'll be much easier to understand what diabetes is about once you know that. Mm-hmm. With normal people, when they digest food, it's converted into glucose. Glucose is a very simple sugar. It goes into your bloodstream, where it's carried to all of your body's cells for energy. When your pancreas senses that there's glucose in the blood, it releases a hormone called insulin. Insulin's job is to be a key. It gets into the bloodstream, and it goes with the glucose, and it actually unlocks the cells cell walls, so that that enables the glucose to go from the bloodstream and into the cells. What happens is that the cells get the energy they need, and at the same time, that glucose is removed from the bloodstream. So the glucose level comes down to normal. So it's an automatic process. With diabetics, that process doesn't work anymore. With type 1, you have an autoimmune disease that gets the body's own defensive cells to attack the insulin-producing cells in the pancreas. So it attacks those cells and it kills them. So with type 1s, our pancreases don't produce much insulin at all. There is a residual amount that it produces, but nowhere near enough. So effectively, there is no insulin available from your own body. For that reason, we have to take insulin directly. It's by injection because insulin breaks down in the stomach. So you have to take it by injection. People like me, you know, we do it every day, sometimes multiple times a day, but it does keep us going. Type 2 is a different disease, though, although it also results in high blood sugars. With type 2, there's an underlying condition called insulin resistance. What happens with that is that your cells actually do become resistant to insulin, just like the name suggests, and it makes it harder for the insulin to unlock those cell walls. It gets worse over time to the point where your pancreas works overtime to produce more insulin than it ever did before, and eventually those cells wear out. By the time a person is diagnosed with prediabetes, they've already lost about half of the pancreas's ability to make insulin. So that's already being impaired. And with type 2, it's a fight. You know, sometimes they'll wind up taking insulin themselves. That's later on, after the pancreas is damaged even more. But the goal of a type 2 is to try to restrict the amount of sugar that is in their bloodstream. If they can do that, they can reduce the amount of insulin that's demanded and preserve the life of the pancreas for longer. The longer they can do that, the easier it's going to be to control blood sugars, and the better your health is going to be.
All right. And there's one of them you can actually is reversible. I've heard about that. Is that type 2 or that type 1 that could be reversible? One of the two can be. I don't remember which one.
Well, here's the thing, Chris. And this is actually one of the big issues out there that I'm trying to address. Mm-hmm. It's really a word game. When you become insulin resistant, you have something that's incurable. It's never going to go away. Mm-hmm. And you're going to have to fight your blood sugars forever. When they say that diabetes is reversible, what they mean is that if your blood sugars are already at a diabetic level, mm-hmm. which they may not be, even though you've got insulin resistance. With insulin resistance, it starts off with prediabetes, so your sugar levels are lower. They progress to where they get to a higher level, and at that higher level, that's when diabetes is diagnosed. It's just an extension of the same process. When they say it's reversible, what they're saying is that you can, if your blood sugars are over the diabetes threshold, that you can bring that level down below the diabetes threshold. And if you do that for a period of time, you know, they'll say it varies from 3 months to a year. If you can maintain that for a certain amount of time, they'll say that you've reversed diabetes. But that sounds like it's a permanent thing, and it's not. The way you get it down, the way you, quote, reverse, unquote, it, is to watch your diet, limit the amount of sugar you put into your body, exercise on a regular basis, and do other things that'll keep that blood sugar low. Once you get it down below that threshold, if you stop doing those right things, your blood sugar is going to go back over that threshold in a heartbeat. So when they say reversible, it implies that you'll no longer have to worry about this, but that's not the case at all. You're in that fight no matter what. It just really means that you've been very successful at controlling your blood sugars. And if you can do that, you deserve a lot of credit.
All right. It's really interesting because I never knew that. Well, I heard this from a YouTuber. I don't think I should really believe everything he says. It's a long story with him. But, I mean, he has diabetes in himself, and it is a fight. It's always a fight. What are the life changes when you have diabetes?
I'm sorry?
What are the life changes when you have diabetes?
Well, the main things, well, number one, one life change is that you need to learn about this disease. You need to know the things that you should do and then do them. Because if you don't know, you're in trouble. Mm-hmm. Now, the main things you need to know are that this always boils down to diet and exercise. Even with the pharmaceuticals that are out there, every single one of those pharmaceuticals tells you that it only works along with diet and exercise. Now, what do I mean by diet? What you need to do is identify the amount of carbohydrates that you're eating. Now, carbohydrates are a lot more dangerous than you would think. People don't equate it with being sugar, but the fact is that 1 gram of carbohydrate digests into 1 gram of sugar. It's the exact same thing, even though carbohydrates don't necessarily taste as sweet as sugar does. Common examples of carbohydrates are breads, pastas. White pasta especially is very high in carbohydrate. Even fruits and some vegetables have carbohydrates. So what you need to do is know the carbohydrates are going to raise your blood sugar, and then identify the carbohydrates that you're eating. Diet can be a really complicated thing. Nutritionists are very smart people who've got a lot of knowledge, but they can really bury you with a lot of information that may confuse you. What I do, and what I suggest other people do, is take a look at your own diet. Most of us have breakfasts that are more or less the same. Lunches will be more or less the same. Dinners will vary more. But over the course of a month, even those recipes get repeated. So the universe of foods that we as individuals are looking at isn't really that big. So it's easy to look at what you're eating and say, well, here's the carbohydrate. I once did a program for some homeless people, and they had a breakfast for them there. It consisted of scrambled eggs, sausage, and grits. And it was a great way to explain, you know, the diet part of it. The grits are carbohydrate. They will raise your blood sugar. But the sausage is a protein, and so is the egg. So if you load up on the sausage and egg and have a taste of grits, that's the way to do it, because your meal consists of things that are not going to raise your blood sugar. Well, everybody can do the same thing. Take a look at what's on your plate for breakfast and say, well, this toast here, you know, that's going to be the carbohydrate. The eggs won't. So what you can do is have, you know, say one piece of toast instead of two, and eat additional eggs, you know, to make yourself feel full. Mm-hmm. So those are the kinds of trade-offs that I suggest people do, and it's something that you can do pretty easily. One thing I've found, because I have people know that I've written a book about diabetes, and I give a course about it, so I get people asking me about it all the time. And one thing I found is that a lot of people like to eat cold cereal as a snack before they go to bed. Raisin bran is a pretty typical one, but raisin bran is very, very high in carbohydrate. The flakes themselves are carbohydrate, the raisins are, and then just for fun, they sprinkle it all with sugar, you know. So he got a meal here that really is high in carbohydrate. Mm-hmm. And when you eat it just before you go to bed, it raises your blood sugar, and then you're sedentary because you're sleeping overnight, so your body doesn't have a chance to work it off. So that's really low-hanging fruit. And I've had a lot of people tell me that, you know, I stopped eating the raisin bran before I went to bed, and it did make a difference. So that's the kind of thing we need to look at. That's one of the things that is a lifestyle change. You know, you have to look at food as not just being something that tastes good, but, you know, what are its components? Is it carb or is it not carb? Now, the other thing that's a bedrock treatment is exercise. Now, I know a lot of people don't like the idea of exercise, but in the context of diabetes, this is not what you think of. You don't have to join a gym. You don't have to train for a marathon. All you have to do is keep your body moving. The definition that I use is it's anything that makes your skeleton move, because literally that is all you need to do. In fact, in the case of diabetes, moderate exercise is better for you than strenuous exercise is. The reason for that is that it helps your body build up a certain amount of fat. A certain amount of muscle. And muscle is really, it's a miracle tissue, because your muscle will absorb glucose directly out of the blood. If it's active, it'll burn it off. And if it's not active, it'll store it for later use. So it's a mechanism that we can use day in and day out to keep our blood sugars under control. Another good thing about it is that although it's great to have exercise every day, it doesn't have to be every day. If you do it every other day, the effect still is there. So, you know, those are two ways to look at diet and exercise that makes them seem much more manageable than what a lot of people think.
Yeah, and they say, I think about four or five times a week or something, between 3 and 5 days, about 4 or 5 times a week sometimes. Mm-hmm. They say for exercise is the best, especially going out for walks. Actually, every time I go for my walk, I always have my iPhone, and and I have like the health app, and I you can see I already got 24 in my steps today. I'm probably going to go out for another walk after. I just feel like I got some scratch off, so I want to go get that check, so that still adds up in my steps. But I like, you know, counting my steps, and they usually say about 6 to 7,000, so 7 to 8,000 I think a day is the best to get in steps, so, which is good.
Well, it's a case of more is better. Mm-hmm. The more exercise you get, the better off you are. But you've got the right idea by going for a walk. You don't have to kill yourself by you know, going for long runs or lifting weights, or, you know, I mean, all that stuff is good. If you can do it, great. But you don't have to for diabetes. You know, just going for that walk is a good thing. One thing that I found years ago, and I've worked out my whole life, but one thing I figured out for myself years ago is that I would always push myself to do more. You know, you can go a little bit faster, you can go a little bit longer, you can lift a little more weight. But what you're doing is putting stress on yourself every single time you work out. And it gets to the point where you get tired of pushing yourself to the limit all the time. You're much better off doing something that you can do every day, and it's not a terrible burden. You don't mind doing it. In fact, a lot of times you feel better after doing it, so you look forward to it. So that's another way that moderation is better for you. It keeps you coming back.
Exactly. I don't know what the preferable time is. Like what? Like about maybe 40 to 45 minutes of even walking is good enough for the day, for a day?
Well, it varies by the person. Mm-hmm. Well, let me tell you a story. The woman who did the design work on my books, I've written a few books. The one who did it on the diabetes book became type 2 diabetic. She told me that she was prescribed a medication, and when she went to the pharmacy, they wanted to charge her $500 for the prescription. So she's told them to put it back on the shelf, and then she read the book. Now, she had done the design work, but she didn't edit it. You know, she did the pictures and the layouts and all that stuff, but she decided to read the book. And what she learned from the book is exactly what I've just been talking about. It's, you know, moderate exercise and watch your carbohydrates. So she told me she did that for 3 months. She walked for 20 minutes a day. You know, and in answer to your question of how long you should walk, she did it for 20 minutes a day. She wound up losing a bunch of weight, and her blood sugar dropped like a rock. So she went back to the doctor who prescribed her the medication, and he was blown away by what she had done. And he asked her what she did, and she told him, and she said, it's just basics. So, you know, there's a case where even 20 minutes a day did the trick. She probably didn't even have to do it every day. But the principle works. You know, do some exercise and watch your carbs.
Mm-hmm. How do you learn to accept diabetes?
I had no choice. You know, there are some things we're settled with, Chris. It's just what it is. You know, I've never found that complaining about something or feeling sorry for yourself ever did any good. Better just to accept the hand you're dealt. Understand that diabetes is not cancer. It's not MS. It's not a whole lot of things that are a whole lot more serious than what diabetes is. So even in that context, you know, it's nothing you want to have. But on the other hand, at least today, it's manageable. Mm-hmm. And if you do the right things, you can live a long, healthy life. By the way, diabetes was not always manageable. Mm-hmm. It's been diagnosed for thousands of years. In fact, you know, way back, you know, 2,000 years ago, it was diagnosed because people realized that the ants were congregating around urine. And that's when they realized that it was sugar that people were expelling. And, you know, so it's been around for a long, long time. But what they would do back then is when they diagnosed somebody with diabetes, they gave up on it because they knew they were going to die from it. It was 100% fatal, 100%, you know, for anybody who had type 1 or type 2. It was only until in 1925, when insulin was developed and made available, that we finally had some way of treating diabetes that worked. So it's a serious thing.
Yeah. Here's a good question. If you don't treat, like if you don't, you know, take the insulin or control your sugar levels, you can die from it, correct?
Absolutely. You will die from it.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you why, Chris. Here's an easy way to explain it. Mm-hmm. If you take a glass of water and you drop a couple of tablespoons of sugar into it and stir it up, what happens? Sugar gets sticky.
Yeah.
Well, when you're putting sugar into your bloodstream, that's exactly what you're doing. You are making your blood sticky. And what that stickiness does is it builds up plaque in your entire cardiovascular system. Mm-hmm. It can wreck your kidneys. It can destroy the blood vessels in your eye, so you go blind. Just about every part of your body is damaged by those high blood sugars. We know that people have amputations. It's almost always the feet, mm-hmm, and legs that wind up getting amputated. Yeah. Well, the reason for that is that the feet are the farthest away from your heart, so mm-hmm, the blood pressure is lower, and so that stickiness builds up in those blood vessels first. And those are the blood vessels that wind up getting clogged up, and then eventually they die off. You don't have circulation, you get an infection, you can't fight it, and next thing you know, you've lost a foot. So, yeah, that's what happens.
Yeah. Actually, I had a former teammate of mine, because I played softball way back in, I guess, since 2003 to 2013. I played for 10 years, and his dad actually lost toes, I think? I think it was his toes or his foot? I think it might have been his toe. I don't remember which one it was.
Well, you know, Chris, it could have been both, because it'll start in the toes, and then it progresses. Just like if you lose a foot, it's likely to progress to your leg. Mm-hmm. So it's an ugly thing.
Yeah. Well, he was a big guy too, but the nicest guy, you know, ever to meet. But you know, I felt bad for him, and felt bad for Ronnie too, and the rest of the family too. But
sure.
And he unfortunately passed away, I think, not long after too. But if you don't take care of it, then you know, it's just you take the wrong world, I guess, right? Or not the wrong world, but you know what I mean.
Well, the problem is that a lot of people don't get good advice. I mean, medical professionals, you know, a lot of times, in fact, most of the time, they're not diabetes specialists. Mm-hmm. You know, if you go to an endocrinologist or a certified diabetes educator, they know their stuff, and you will learn from them what to do. But a lot of times, general medical people just don't have the detailed background in diabetes to tell people what they need to do. So you're, in a lot of cases, you're on your own to try to find out.
Mm-hmm.
The wrong road for him probably started with just not knowing what he was up against and mm-hmm. understanding what he had to do to manage it.
Yeah, true. That's true. And for, I guess, either type of diabetes, do you have to go see an endocrinologist?
That's the best route, yeah.
Okay. Is there any medication or insulin you have to take to help the diabetes?
What was the question about what kind of insulin?
What kind of medication or insulin do you have to take?
Oh, yeah, I take insulin because for type 1s, that's the only thing that works.
Mm-hmm.
For type 2s, there are over 50 medications you can take for that.
Mm-hmm.
And they do a whole wide variety of things. Your liver both produces sugar and it releases it into your blood when it mm-hmm. thinks it's necessary. So some medications will reduce the liver's ability to produce insulin or restrict the amount that it puts into your bloodstream. Others will promote the pancreas to produce more insulin with the insulin cells that it's still got left.
Mm-hmm.
Some will suppress your appetite. So there are a whole lot of things that they can do. And that's up to your doctor and yourself to decide what's going to work best for you. I want to make the point here that mm-hmm. diabetes is a very individualized disease. There is not a one-cure-fits-all solution for any of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So you really have to know what the options are, but then how your own body is going to react to it, because we're all different in one way or another. That's another reason you have to understand the basics so that you can figure out whether your body is actually behaving mm-hmm. the way most other people's do. And if it's not, then you have to modify what you're doing. But that takes a long time to do.
It does. I know, when I've had my blood work, I've actually been tested for diabetes many times because of my weight, because I have a weight problem, and I've been clear so far. And that's the one thing I'm actually really focusing on is, you know, losing weight is probably another big thing, right?
Well, Here's another one. You know, you brought up reversals earlier.
Yep.
Weight is another issue that people really have to understand better. The Centers for Disease Control in the U.S. tells us that about 70% of us are overweight and about 10% of us have diabetes. That means that only about 1 out of 7 overweight people becomes diabetic. Even the American Diabetes Association is now saying that most overweight people don't become diabetic. The reason for this is that there's a kernel of truth to this, but it's not like being overweight causes insulin resistance. The reason they say that being heavy contributes is that we have two kinds of fat. There's subcutaneous fat, which is the soft, squishy stuff that's right under the skin. That's what we always think of when we think of fat. But there's another kind called visceral fat. It's hard and it's packed internally around the organs. Now, visceral fat does make insulin resistance worse. So if you're making insulin resistance worse, you're going to make it more likely for your blood sugars to rise. Now, with visceral fat, the nice thing is that when you lose weight, the visceral fat is the weight that gets lost first. That's why they tell people if you lose 5 to 7% of your body weight, you can help yourself with diabetes. Mm-hmm. Because by doing that, you cut down the increased insulin resistance that the larger amount of fat will cause. So it is a factor, but it's really not a root cause. Like I said, it doesn't cause insulin resistance, and insulin resistance is what underlies type 2. If you don't have insulin resistance, it doesn't matter how much you weigh or what you eat. You're not going to have type 2.
Okay. How often do you have to test your blood for sugar levels?
Well, I have a meter that I actually wear, and it radios my blood sugar to a monitor that I can look at. So I'm not deliberately pricking my finger anymore. All I have to do is pick this display out of my pocket and take a look at it, and it'll tell me. So it's a wonderful thing because you can tell, you know, immediately what your blood sugar is.
Mm-hmm.
Before I had that, I used to check it probably 3 or 4 times a day. And the way I would do that, and the way many people still do it today, is that you prick your finger and get a small drop of blood, and you test it with a meter, and it'll tell you. But you know what? Even that is a huge improvement, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
Back when I first got diabetes, none of this stuff existed at all. The only mm-hmm. way you knew whether your blood sugar was high or not was you had this stuff called test tape. It came in a dispenser that looked like a tape measure, and it was a strip of yellow paper. And you would dip that into a urine sample, and depending on what shade of green it turned, you could tell mm-hmm. whether your sugar was lower. If it stayed yellow, it meant it was normal, so that was really good.
Mm-hmm.
But it could turn this really dark green that was really black. And if that happened, it would tell you your blood sugar was high. But because mm-hmm. it was based on your urine, this is old news. This is what your blood sugar was an hour or two ago.
Mm-hmm.
But that was how imperfect the system was back then. But even despite that, you know, I'm still doing fine. And a lot of other people are doing fine just because they did mm-hmm. the basic stuff of understanding about food and exercise. But now our blood sugars are in much, much better control than they ever were.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, today, you know, we have a test called the A1C. What it does is it takes a drop of your blood, and it can tell you what your average blood sugar has been for the previous 2 to 3 months. That's really what determines whether you're going to have complications or not. Today, they want us to be under 7.0,
mm-hmm.
and that's what mine is. It usually runs like 6.6, 6.8, something mm-hmm. like that. But back when I was first diagnosed, if it was in the 8s, that was mm-hmm. really good control, because based on the data that was available, that was the best we could do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, today it's a whole different story. And if people don't understand what's going on, it's too bad, because they have got the tools to really do well with it.
Yeah, exactly. It's come so far since the beginning of diabetes too. Like, I mean, like you said, people died from it thousands of years ago, and they've come so far with the medical technology that you can control it now.
Yeah. Hey, you might be interested in this.
Mm-hmm.
The big breakthrough with diabetes back in the 1920s was that scientists had figured out that insulin was the thing that controlled blood sugar.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't even know that. But when they gave it to people, they developed all kinds of complications. So it wasn't a realistic thing to do. But two guys named Banting and Best, you may have heard those names, they were Canadians. There were researchers at the University of Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
And what Banting figured is that the problem with the insulin was that it wasn't purified well enough. And so what he did is he took the insulin and he managed to get rid of all the enzymes that came from the animals that the pancreases were taken from. He managed to purify it enough that it could be used safely. And as soon as they realized that they had this thing down to where it could be used, Banting and Best turned all of their patents, they had like 30 some odd patents on this process, they turned them over to the University of Toronto for $1 because they felt that this was just something humanity should have. And since that time, diabetics have been surviving by the millions, where they were, you know, they were doomed until then.
Yeah. I've heard of Banting before. So I'm guessing insulin came around the 1920s then?
Yeah, it was right around 1925.
Okay.
Yeah.
Actually, that's when my late grandma, she was born in the 1925. So it was around when she was born. Wow. That's almost 100. If you think of it, it'd be 99 years next year. Almost 100 years on that. That's amazing. I'll have to think about that in 2025. Like, oh yeah, that's when insulin came in. You know?
Well, you're a Canadian.
Yep.
And you can be assured that this will not go without notice in Canada.
Oh, no. We have a lot of history in this country. We're very historic. A lot of history here. So, you know, it will not go unnoticed for sure.
Well, you know, Chris, this was really a huge improvement in health worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
And we're still seeing the effects today. I am still seeing the effects today. If I didn't have insulin, I wouldn't be alive. So I still have Banting and Best to thank for that almost 100 years later.
Oh, definitely. How important is it to take care of yourself?
It's absolutely important. And that's the key to the whole thing. The one thing you cannot do and expect to not have complications is to be inactive, sitting around on the sofa, watching TV, eating things that are high in carbohydrate. Mm-hmm. Obviously, sugar, you know, candy, ice cream, that kind of thing is high in carbohydrate.
Mm-hmm.
But other things, like I mentioned earlier, like breads and whatnot, you got to watch out for that stuff. If you're sedentary and you're loading up on carbohydrates, you are in trouble.
Okay.
You may not know it right away, but you are in trouble.
Oh, definitely. Are there any complications with diabetes, and what are they?
Well, I mentioned earlier that blindness is one.
Mm-hmm.
What happens with blindness is that you have blood vessels on the inside of your eye. After a long period with diabetes or uncontrolled diabetes, those blood vessels will rupture.
Mm-hmm.
And that blood will bleed out into the interior of the eye. It clouds the vision, and that's what causes blindness. Your kidneys can get damaged to where they're no longer able to purify your blood and get the sugar out of them, and as well as other things too. Your circulatory system will wind up with plaque. You'll wind up with cardiovascular disease. You'll get heart attacks as a result. We mentioned blindness. I mean, not blindness, but amputations.
Yeah.
I mean, you think about it. That sticky blood is going through your whole body, and it's damaging just about everything. So the number of complications is enormous.
Mm-hmm. It is. Is there anything else you'd like to add that we did not talk about today?
I wish. Let me just put this in there, Chris. Another big issue that's out there is that there is a stigma about diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
People do think that you brought the disease on yourself, but you didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Both the autoimmune disease for type 1 and insulin resistance are the result of genetics. When you have a genetic predisposition that encounters something in the environment, that's when those underlying conditions happen. It's got nothing to do with your personal behavior, whether you're overweight or anything else. It's genetic. But still, because of what people have been told over the years, we still blame the diabetic for it.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason, you know, the reasons are not valid, but they cause diabetics to feel guilt and shame. In fact, when I've done my diabetes classes, the most gratifying time for me is when somebody comes up to me after the class and says, "The best thing you told me is that I'm not responsible for getting this." Chris, you can see the guilt and shame melt off their faces because they've been beating themselves up because they think that they caused the disease, which they did not. So as a society, we have to recognize that that's the way this thing starts and that people don't bring it on themselves. It's not because they're fat, lazy, and irresponsible. Mm-hmm. It's got nothing to do with it. Now, once you get those underlying conditions, obviously you have to do the right things. And if you don't, then that's on you. Mm-hmm. But the guilt and shame part of it has got to go away. Mm-hmm. Personally, when I first became diabetic, I kept it to myself. The reason for that is that I didn't want people to think I was weak. And that's another thing about diabetes. People know so little about it, they don't know whether you're reliable or whatever. So I thought, well, I don't want people thinking that. So I kept it to myself for 30 years. After the 30 years is when I decided to write the book. I had heard mm-hmm. about Santo and decided that this is a problem. So I came basically out of the closet about diabetes, and I told everybody I knew that I had the disease, and I asked them to tell other people that they knew who had diabetes that I had it as well, because I wanted to talk to everybody. And in the end, I wound up talking to a lot of people about it. Well, one guy came up to me. I'd known this guy for 20 years, and he didn't know I had diabetes. And he said, "So I hear you're diabetic." I said, "Yeah, I do." And he said, "Well, you don't look like a diabetic." Mm-hmm. Well, that was my point. You know, what did you think a diabetic was supposed to look like? You know, that's the kind of characterization that I was trying to avoid for those 30 years. But then to take this story one step farther, I ran into a former employee a number of years ago. He was in a wheelchair, and he explained to me that he had type 2 diabetes. He didn't take care of it. He eventually couldn't take the pain anymore, so he went to the hospital. They took one leg on one day and the other on the next. And now he's on a wheelchair. He died 2 years later. He told me that if I ever got diabetes, to make sure I take care of it. Now, I thought about this, Chris, and I thought, well, this is probably the biggest problem with the stigma. Now, for 30 years, I kept it a secret. If my employee had known that I had diabetes, and he came to me and said, "Gee, Chet, I've got diabetes, and I know you do too, but what can you tell me about it?" Maybe he would have taken it seriously, and he would still be alive today. Mm-hmm. But this keeping it secret among diabetics is a very common thing. Most of us just don't want the grief that we're likely to get from people who don't know what they're talking about. But if we give diabetics who fight the disease mm-hmm. the respect they deserve, then people could open up, and they would get the same peer support that people with other serious diseases get. So I guess mm-hmm. that's the one thing I'd like to get across in the end.
All right. And I hope for my listeners, this actually really educate you guys on diabetes in the end. I really, really hope we, you know, answered a lot of your questions as well. I'm sure there's a way you can reach out to Chet if you have any questions further.
Sure. Well, Chris, could I just throw a couple things in here?
Yep.
One is that I have books out. You can go to Amazon and find them there. The best one is the most recent. It's called The Diabetes Book, What Everyone Should Know. It's a book not just for diabetics, but for your family members and anybody else who wants to learn about it. And if you'd like to learn more about me, you could go to my website, which is challengediabetes.us.
Mm-hmm. All right. And I'll put that in the links in the description as well, just so everybody can go check it out as well.
Great.
And I'd like to thank you for coming on the podcast today, Chet. It was, I learned a lot about diabetes.
I'm glad.
Yeah. And especially knowing, now I know what my uncles are going through with diabetes. I really understand it. And I can go to them and say, "Hey, I know a lot more about diabetes now than I did before." You know, I can go and say, I learned this, and this. I can educate them. Tell them what I know. So, you know, it's good. I learned a lot today.
Well, I'm really happy to hear you say that, because that's the whole idea. Mm-hmm. I want people like you, regular people, to understand the facts and then share them with anybody. You know, we got to change the way society looks at it. And I appreciate that.
Yeah. And as always, you can follow Crispy on the Web on Facebook and Instagram, Crispy on the Web. And I will see you guys next week for another episode of the podcast. I don't know what I'm doing yet. I will figure something out, I'm sure. But have a great week. And just a second, I just want to make sure there is no bonus. Oh, there is. there is a bonus episode this week. Sorry. There is a bonus episode. I will see you. I'll talk to you guys on Thursday on the audio only for the bonus episode. And until then, have a great week. And I will see you guys next on Thursday for another episode of MM Podcast. Bye for now.
Entertainment Man Podcast is a weekly radio show produced by Crispy on the Web Media. All rights reserved. Any illegal reproduction of this content will result in immediate legal action.
Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week again for a fresh round.
It's the Entertainment Man Podcast.